I'm Paul Pachter, President and CEO of Long Island Cares. Welcome back to another episode of Breaking Bread. Breaking Bread is sponsored by Cardworks. Cardworks is a multifaceted service that handles credit card transactions for businesses using credit cards. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, so on and so forth. So if you have those kind of needs, reach out to cardworks.com. Today, I'm very excited to welcome my guest, Robert Vitelli. He's the CEO of the LGBT Network right here on Long Island, but they also serve Queens. Robert, welcome. It's great to see you.
Paul, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. So before we get into a deeper discussion, tell me what the LGBT Network is all about and what you do.
Sure, thank you. The LGBT Network, we're a 501c3 nonprofit charity. We're a home and we're a voice, not only for the LGBT community, but also for their families and their support systems. And we serve the LGBT community throughout the lifespan, youth, all the way to older adult, everyone in between. We operate 4 community centers. Our largest and headquartered community center is right here in Hop Hog. We're in Bayshore for Hampton Center in Sag Harbor. And we are in Astoria, Queens, our Queens LGBT Center.
All told, how many people does your organization provide support services for?
Sure. Directly, we're serving over 5,000 people every single year through our community centers. And then through our education programs, we serve anywhere from 10,000 to 13,000 people a year. Mm-hmm. And our outreach and community organizing can easily reach over 1 million people every single year.
Wow, that's a lot of people. Give me an idea of what some of the programs are that the LGBT Network provides.
Sure. Well, it's a couple of different areas of service. Number one, probably the most important thing that we do is providing that safe space in our community centers for a lot of our group programs, whether that's supportive in nature or just social in terms of building community. So we have tailored programs for young people, for folks who are transgender, for LGBT people who are always or often speak Spanish. So those programs delivered exclusively in Spanish. We also have programs for LGBT-headed families because LGBT people with kids face so many challenges in terms of even just their regular socializing in their communities. And then tailored programs also for LGBT older adults, which is a really significant part of what we do.
I think many people, when you talk about the LGBTQ plus population, don't necessarily focus in on seniors as part of the group. And I know that at Long Island Cares, we provide emergency food assistance to many people, a diverse population. And in the last few years, it's become more apparent to us that many seniors from the LGBTQ network are isolated in many ways. They need the support. They're not sure how to go about it. They're not sure who to contact. They're not even sure that they want to risk themselves by saying that they're food insecure or they need help. And I would imagine that regardless of age and regardless of where you live, reaching out to your organization is a critical first step in someone being able to become more comfortable with who they are. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the challenges is the fact that LGBT older adults do face significant levels of isolation. They're very often rejected from their own families for when they come out. A lot of the older adults we serve came out later in life, and so some of them may have been married to someone of the opposite gender. They might have kids. Sometimes they're even rejected from their own children. Then compounded with the realities of discrimination in the workplace as an openly LGBT person. So it really compromises their ability to have a very high quality of life in their older or golden years. So one of the things that we've actually done is we have our LGBT-friendly affordable senior housing. It's actually on the same property as our Bayshore Community Center. And this provides 72 units of LGBT-friendly affordable senior housing. And we opened it in 21, and it's tremendous. There's a waiting list, and the older adults there love it. And that opportunity to feel safe because they're so, unfortunately, accustomed to discrimination. Discrimination not only in the workplace, but in their living situation. So for them to be able to have a safe space to live has been really critical. And because of that, then we've really been able to look at and start to really address, like what you started to talk about was like the food insecurity. You know, one of the myths and stereotypes that we deal with about the LGBT community are these myths that every single LGBT person is wealthy and well off. Mm. And that's not true. And in fact, you know, at least 25% of LGBT people are living in poverty. And they are more susceptible to food insecurity. And certainly our older adults are at very high risk for food insecurity, definitely.
It's interesting that you say that the public's perception, some people in the public have this perception that people who are part of the LGBT community are wealthy. You know, I think they turn on a program, they read an article about Fire Island and think everyone owns a home with a built-in swimming pool, they're having wild parties. How bad off could they be? Yet, we're living in such a precarious time when it comes to the LGBTQ population. They're being attacked politically. They're being attacked by organized religion. They're being attacked by, you know, white supremacists and, you know, other hate mongers. And I know that in recent years, your work in that space has become even more important and critical. You know, we would think that decades ago, when we heard about the incident, I can't remember his last name now, so shame on me, Matthew, the young guy.
Matthew Shepard.
That became a rallying cry, certainly for the entertainment industry, who was now starting to, you know, be very vocal about this. And you have, you know, the GLAAD organization and other people. What are you seeing, your organization, and what are you doing, what can you do to respond to this kind of hate that exists in our country right now?
Sure. Yeah, I would say that the extremism, the anti-LGBT rhetoric and anti-LGBT extremism is palpable. Mm-hmm. I would say it's growing. So I think it's our education work as well as our community organizing work. So, you know, this organization started 30 years ago as a youth serving organization. A lot of people know it as Legally or Long Island Gay and Lesbian Youth. And it was all about going into schools to deliver education about the experiences of LGBT people. You know, and that has grown and scaled over the years to really everyone in the community, workplaces, nonprofits, healthcare, in addition to schools. And so I would say that signature work is really what helps to break a lot of the stereotypes and I think bring people into the fold and create a safe space for people to ask questions, get answers, and just break down those barriers. You know, there's so many stereotypes, whether it's about being wealthy, whether it's about being white in the LGBT community, that LGBT people of color don't even exist. You know, all of those myths and being able to let people know and educate them that the community is extremely diverse and has a variety of needs. You know, in our workplace trainings, we talk about the fact that almost 50% of LGBT people aren't even out at work. And it's a really shocking statistic. 31% of those are afraid to be out because they're afraid of losing connections with their coworkers. And I think that continues to underscore the realities of what it's like to grow up and live as an LGBTQ person in our country today. Because that extremism is really what keeps people in the closet. So our role of being able to go into a school in particular, to workplaces, organizations, and be able to support developing and growing a culture where there's less bullying, there's less discrimination, there's less harassment, so that people can feel comfortable enough to actually be out. And it's really vital. And our community organizing work, you know, being able to work in tandem and concert with families and parents and other community members to make sure that there's fair and equitable and inclusive representation in something like a public library board or even school boards, and supporting people who want to make sure that their voices, their perspectives are heard and represented.
No, I agree with you. You look at what's going on right now in certain states, Florida for one, where they're banning the schools from teaching about diversity and including the LGBTQ plus population. They're banning teaching of African-American history in the schools. They're banning books. They're passing laws to outlaw drag shows in their community. So knowing that the younger population that you serve are victimized by bullying online and certainly bullying in school, how do you see the population right now? on Long Island? What are some of the challenges that your organization is seeing? Because people will say, oh, we don't do that on Long Island. We don't ban drag shows. But the fact of the matter is there is an extreme right movement on Long Island that's taking their cues from the governor of the state of Florida.
Yes. And we've met them. Mm-hmm. It's very real here. I think, we have organized rallies. We've organized community members to go to school board meetings, to public library board meetings. And we are coming literally face to face with this extremism. Mm-hmm. And I think part of what's been so vital is being able to actually support people in the community and empower them to have a voice, to actually mm-hmm. stand up. People are so incredibly scared that we go into one of those spaces and they can see the opposition. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we've done and part of our community organizing has been creating something called our Pride Patrol. And that is, this group of people that wear our t-shirts. This is mm-hmm. Pride Patrol, has a rainbow flag. But it gives people a sense of safety to be able to go into one of these meetings that is very volatile mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And feel safe because they can see other people that are there with them to be able to say, hey, whatever it is they want to talk about and give voice to and advocate very often for their own kids in that school environment and to stand up to it. And what we've seen is when we give, reasonable, rational voice to the needs of the LGBT community, mm-hmm. It's very difficult for that extremism to fight back. Mm-hmm. And so that's been really, our goal, is being able to support the community, organize, give them visibility, again, more than anything, empower people to be able to not be afraid and to feel safe, mm-hmm. to be able to speak up for their rights and the rights and safety of their own kids.
It's extremely troubling to know that there are people that would try to address a meeting of their local school board and would have to have a group in the hall, almost like the Guardian Angels in New York City,
yes.
Where they see the hat, they see the flag, and it's like, I feel a little more calmer. I feel a little more protective. How are the families speaking up? Because I don't think we do enough talking about the families. We talk about the population themselves, but, families go through a great deal of, difficulty accepting their child, accepting another relative who comes out, and then to go public, knowing that there may be a backlash against them. So do you see the families becoming more empowered through the work that your organization does? And I say that because I remember many years ago when I was in the mental health system that the families of children who suffered from psychiatric disabilities always had a great deal of shame and embarrassment and grief that they caused this. And does the same thing happen with the LGBT community? Parents feeling, I must have done something, as opposed to, this is all about the internet. They saw something on the internet, they caught this from RuPaul, and that's not the truth, guys. We're born differently.
I would say I think there's less of that today than there was, let's say, like 10, 20 years ago. I think the changes that we've seen in the last 20 to 25 years in terms of social consciousness mm-hmm. For the existence of LGBT people, I would say has drastically advanced. So I think families less so think there's something that they did wrong as opposed to the recognition that there's something that they need to themselves come to terms with. So I would say that's a real advancement. So we have a parent group, and the parent group is so widely used, and it's great because parents really help each other mm-hmm. to understand their kid, because they're all there because they want to support their kid, but they just need to figure out how they're going to get to that space, because mm-hmm. people are, our society, our culture sure. is one that really is anti-LGBT extensively, and we're taught those ways. So bringing those parents together and giving them that space to come to terms with those challenges and work through those challenges has been amazing. And now, we have parents that will come to, we offer counseling. They come to counseling with their kid. Now we see parents that bring their kid to our Friday night youth program. That's not something we saw even 10 or 15, mm-hmm. especially not 20 years ago. So I would say there's a very, very significant change. I would say Now what we're seeing, talking about families, are the LGBT-headed families. Mm. They are experiencing something very different because they're really underestimated and undervalued in terms of their own parenting. We had two dads with their four adopted slash foster kids at our Families Day this year. And they're talking about their challenges with a local reporter about people saying, but there's no mom. So that means you can't do this or you can't mm-hmm. do that. And so this level of stigma that people in our community continue to face, even though there's been such great advances, mm-hmm. is still very palpable mm-hmm. and can be very challenging and even demoralizing for a mm-hmm. lot of folks.
We have about a minute left. You have a very big event coming up shortly, the Pride Parade.
Yes.
It's being held in Huntington.
Yes.
And your Grand Marshal is Roth Matthews, right?
Yes.
From the E! Television Network and all the red carpet stuff that he does. when is that being held?
Sure.
What do people need to know and how can they support you?
Thank you. Sunday, June 11th, Huntington Village, 12 o'clock noon, the 33rd annual Long Island Pride Parade and Festival, and then we'll have the festival afterwards in Heckscher Park. Mm-hmm. Ross Matthews mm-hmm. As our one of our Grand Marshals this year. And Ross, I've seen Ross mostly on RuPaul's Drag Race. Mm-hmm. But what a tremendous performer and comedian. We're so grateful to be able to recognize Ross for all the work that they've done. And even though it's the 33rd annual Pride Parade, we took it over a couple years ago. The organization, the LGBT Network, is actually celebrating 30 years of service this year. So it's a really big year for us, and we're really glad to kind of we're excited for a blowout year and
Sounds
a really great
excellent.
Time.
If either the individual who identifies as LGBT or the family wants to utilize your services, get in touch with you, how would they go about it?
LGBTnetwork.org. You can reach out for our services or education being involved with Pride. Anyone can actually march with the LGBT Network mm-hmm. At the Pride Parade. Anything that anyone needs to know, lgbtnetwork.org. They can also give us a call, 631-665-2300, or email us at info@lgbtnetwork.org.
That's outstanding. Thank you. Robert Vitelli, the CEO of the LGBT Network right here on Long Island. An incredible organization doing incredible work for a population that really deserves our respect, our support, and our money. So help out the organization. Help out the families. Make sure that these services continue because so many people benefit from it. If you enjoy what you're watching right here on YouTube, please consider subscribing to our program, Breaking Bread. Until next time, this is Paul Pachter, CEO of Long Island Cares. Keep taking care of one another and speak out, especially if you feel something's been unjust. We'll see you next time.